Yes, Prabhu, some question.
Maharaj. There is a question from Sundar Gopal Prabhu from Austria. So he says, in Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, chapter 14, verse 8, it is said, and there is a shloka, Te nukampam susamiksamano punjana evatma krittam vipakam Hridvakvaprubhir vadathan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhag. So translation, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So the question is, can you kindly explain this shlokam in detail?
These prayers are the prayers of Brahma, Brahma Stuti, and they occur after the Brahma Vimohan Leela. It's announced in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the first sloka, it says, Muhyanti Yatsuraya, that even the gods are bewildered in trying to estimate, properly assess, understand the pastimes of Krishna, and by inference the divinity of Krishna, because they themselves go by the name of gods and goddesses, the devata. One name of Krishna is Deva-deva, the god's god. So people in general, when they think of God, they have some, they have a general concept about divinity, and makes so many assumptions, rightly or wrongly. But when it comes to understanding theism, as it's been given in India and Vedic culture, they're sometimes at a loss how to process it all. Even Mark Twain, the author of Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, American humorist, he visited India in those days by boat. And one remark, his impression of seeing religious expression in India was that he said, when it comes to religion and belief in God, India is the only millionaire. Which was a nice way of putting it. So he's saying that implies actually a very broad conception of divinity, which seems like, you know, an understatement. If you're dealing with the infinite, of course, would have to be. But the Western eye, when it gazes towards India, most often thinks like, oh, they have millions of gods. Indiscriminately. There's just millions of gods and nobody can make heads or tails out of it or sense of the whole thing. That's not a fact. Just as in a country, you know, there are in cities, mayors, in states, governors, or of a province. And then there's often, you know, a prime minister, a president. there's some hierarchy. So locally, in a particular domain, the mayor is supreme, you could say, the chief executive, but not in the ultimate sense. The mayor's powers were absorbed by the governor. So then we can think, oh, is the governor supreme? No, then there's the it can either be prime minister, president, king, what have you. There's someone who is the ultimate representative who absorbs all the powers of the others. So if someone thought, because they heard there were many mayors and governors, and they think, it's too confusing, who can understand all of that? Actually, there is a way to understand all of it. How to systematically understand this that makes sense, and that's how. So the devatas, the gods and goddesses of this world, are empowered representatives, surrogates, in the sense of the supreme authority, right? Divinity, and at the source of everything. Who's the deva deva, the god's god, the god of the gods and goddesses. Brahma, who we hear as the, you know, he's in the Vedic conception of creation, as we have first, I mean, use words like first, second, third, fourth, is not actually that helpful, because by Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency, is eternally manifest this way. And the creation is coming for some times and going, coming and going. Gita says, bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. But just for the sake of some sort of linear analysis, hierarchical structure, we know Krishna, Balaram. From Balaram, we're told this Chaturvyuha. It's fourfold Vishnu expansions. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha. Then there's a second one. Right? And then from the second quadruple, for each one of these four, they expand four, another four, another four. So you have minimally, for starters, you know, 64 Vishnus. And it goes on from there. Vaikuntha means unlimited. So the unlimited Vaikuntha world. But also, and the reason I say this is will be helpful in understanding the backstory, the background will be helpful in understanding why Brahma has reached certain conclusions. So after all those Vishnu expansions, the Vaikuntha world, and each Vishnu accompanied by a Lakshmi, right? We're told there are the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, and Mahavishnu. The word Maha here, if ever Maha was applicable, Maha, Mahavishnu, Vishnur Maha, Niha Yasha Kala Vishesho. What is that? Yashaika Nishvashita Atavalambya Jivanti Loma Vilija Jagadandanata. It's like, how many pores are there on the human being? Anybody? Right. Can Google the average human body. And then you have these hairs coming out of the pores, right? It's something we learn this when you're children, I think. It's like a universal thing, probably in school or in biology or before that. We hear like hairs, pores, like we get, oh, okay. But here we're told, because this human-like form, the template for that is the divine form. So to understand Mahavishnu, they're saying, how large is this form of the Lord that he's lying in yoga nidra, in the type of spiritual sleep, with his eyes half closed, and during his outward going breath, in terms of the expansion and contraction of time and space, during his outward going breath, innumerable universes are being generated. And this means that mundane, the Vaikunthas are already there, which is the vast majority. And just, although it's not entirely proportional, it's like 3/4, 1/4, just to give you like a rule of thumb. By the way, and considering the rule of thumb, when Varaha Dev came out of the nostril of Brahma, it was the size of a thumb, then expanded to an elephant size, and then universal size. That's also possible. Consider a sort of other type of rule of thumb. But so, and that Vishnu, so when he exhales, innumerable universes are generated, inhales, they're withdrawn. And where do they come? Out of the hair pores of his bodies, universes come, like Jagadanda. Anda means egg in Sanskrit. Jagadanda is what a universe is called, the universal eggs. Like golden eggs, they come out and they expand. And then when he breathes in, they all are withdrawn. And then he exhales, they come out again. How much time is that? Roughly 315 trillion years. 150 out, 150 in, 150, like that. Mahavishnu. And we're told then in each and every one of those universes enters Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And that Garbhodakshayi Vishnu is not unlike Mahavishnu, but lying on Sheshananda at the bottom of the universe, and his sweat is like an ocean, the Garbhodak ocean. And from the navel, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu's navel, it's like a beautiful lotus navel. And actually out of that navel spirals a lotus flower, rather large in size, proportional to universal proportion. And there's a lotus flower, and then the lotus flower opens, and there is Brahma. So one of his names is Atmabhu, means he had no mother and father, born from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And that Brahma, so he's looking frantically in the four directions and generates four heads. That's frantic. And is wondering, as one is wont to do, he's wondering, who am I? Where have I come from? What is my purpose? What am I? What is this lotus flower? Where does it come from? He's thinking like that. And we're told, he hears these syllables, ta, pa, ta, pa. Tapa. Tapa is the Sanskrit expression for tapasya, which means voluntarily inconveniencing oneself for the sake of spiritual realization, which is what to this day all spiritual practitioners do. Right? What Solzhenitsyn nicely expressed in his World Split Apart commencement address at Harvard, he called it serene, voluntary self-restraint. That's what it is. Serene, voluntary self-restraint. Brahma gets this inspiration to meditate. And he meditates for 1,000 celestial years, which are longer than earth years. But there's a way of calculating them also. So just like what we thought, the moon, 6 months, one day, 6 months, one night. Anyway, so Brahma, he's meditating. And he, if we switch the narrative to the Brahma Sangita, therein, where his other prayers are, we find that Brahma, two things there, Dibya Saraswati and the flute song of Krishna. He hears in his eight ear holes the flute song of Krishna, and his verbal realization of that is expressed as the Brahma Gayatri. And also the Dibya Saraswati, because there's no material world yet, so it cannot be the Saraswati goddess of the material world. It's yet to be generated. So Dibya Saraswati gives him one particular mantra that we chant in the Gaudiya line about gopi identity. So that Brahma, he's generating planets and manasaputras, living beings produced from his internal consideration that will then subsequently populate the universe. But Brahma, as a placeholder, generally what we would call karma misra bhakta. He's involved with the material world, devotionally inclined, some mixture. Yeah. Shiva being the archetype for Jnana Misra Bhakti, this Karma Misra Bhakti in its highest expression. So Brahma, creator of the universe. So on the one hand, we think like, how qualified? In many religious traditions, he would be considered God because he creates the world in which so many live. But my Vedic consideration, one Brahma per universe, innumerable universes, innumerable Brahmas. As we're told, once Brahma, one of his pastimes, he goes to Dwaraka. When Krishna's in his Dwaraka Leela as a king with so many queens, Brahma goes to visit him. And he's waiting in his outer office, and the secretary says, "And who might you be?" And he's saying, "I'm Brahma. I'd like to meet with Krishna. All right, I'll be back. Your call is important to us." And he goes and tells Krishna, "There's a Brahma here to see you." And Krishna says, "Which Brahma?" So the secretary goes back and said, "Excuse me, sir, which Brahma are you?" And Brahma's a little, he's the creator of the universe, like father of the four Kumaras, four-headed Brahma. He's like, "All right, keep your foreheads cool." He goes back and tells Krishna, "It's Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras, four-headed Brahma, the Lord." Like, see him in. Then Brahma comes, "Oh, my Lord," he gives his dandavat, "I'm so happy to see you, and by your grace, everything's going well, really well." Krishna says, "Is there any way I can help you?" He says, "Well, something. But I have a question first, before we get to that. The secretary asked me, which Brahma? Are there other Brahmas besides me?" At that moment, Krishna summoned all the Brahmas from all the universes, some with 8 heads, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 10, a mega of heads, mega-headed Brahma. They all come, and they're like, when they give their dandavats, they're wearing these like crowns, and it goes like, it's a big sound, and they're all, and our Brahma, he like so tiny, He's seeing all these Brahmas from all these universes. I said, and he felt like, variously, an insect in the midst of so many giant elephants. He was so humbled. We were talking recently about negativity. This is when it's real. You're not faking it. It's not opposing a posture. However qualified you thought you were, you realize it's all relative. Qualification is a relative thing. Was qualified in one place, not qualified enough in another, or excelled by the qualifications of others. So humility is a good strategy to survive progressive realization. So that Brahma, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, saying, Muhyanti Atsuraya, sometimes even the gods, they're bewildered and trying to assess, understand, appreciate fully Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. And again, Brahma Vimohan, the illusion of that Brahma can be put into illusion, that's very instructional for us. We should never think that we are beyond being deluded. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, we should always remember that Maya is very great and we are very small, and at any moment we may be overwhelmed. And if people find it hard to digest, they think, well, wait, but what about the Brahma? He's the head of our sampradaya, and then here he becomes bewildered, and how can we digest all these things? Then Jiva Goswami comes to our aid with the Kalpado explanation. Say, this pastime happened in one day of Brahma. Maybe not his best day. But, you live for 315 trillion years. You're going to have some off days. But the Bhagavatam is giving this hint in the beginning. Why does it say it in the very beginning? The first sloka, the first three slokas, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojan, Tattva. So the first sloka is going to be very important and critical and filled with unlimited important consideration. So, Janmadyasya Yataha. Interestingly, echoing what was given in Vedanta Sutra. If Veda, Kalpataru, is the tree of Veda, and Vedanta, Pushpa, is the flower, the floral essence of the Vedas, just like we have that, right? Floral essences, aromatherapy. Then as the flower gives way to the fruit, Nigama Kalpataru, Galitam, Palam, Shukamukaram, Ritradava Samyatam, Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalaya Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. The Bhagavatam. If the fruit of the fruit-bearing tree is the purpose of that tree. Really, it has no other purpose. Its whole function, even you may look at the limbs individually and draw all kinds of make so many observations, draw so many conclusions, but understand the purpose of a mango tree is to produce mangoes, not firewood, or to be made into something else. It's to produce mangoes. That's what it's for. Okay? Even the flower of the mango gives way to the fruit, the mango, the Kalpataru Veda. Desire tree of the Vedas, its purpose is to produce this fully ripened fruit. That means Krishna and his pastimes, particularly his past Madhura, sweetest pastimes with Srimati Radharani and Braja Gopis. That's the purpose of all of this. It's not about moral behavior, and not that that's a bad thing. Those are all secondary things. It's to produce this juicy, ripened fruit that is sweet and irresistible and gives one, you know, life that we've always sought, and actually at every step of the way. It's not some irrelevant thing, or, you know, a book, you know, with so much mythology. No, there's a purpose to all of this. So echoing the sentiments of Vedanta, says, janmadyasya yataha. That's a sutra in Vedanta, but it's the first three words of the Bhagavad Purana, saying, because now we're presenting God, the Supreme Absolute Truth, properly, fully, purely, without any mangling, or, in its own words, cheating, or here's the straight truth, pure, janmadyasya taha, saying, and it's echoing what's expressed in the Upanishads, yato ba imani bhutani jayante. Sometimes modern educated people or of a scientific bent have some difficulty accepting religious terminology or things like that. But if you define God, well, why don't we start with from which everything is manifested, by which it's being maintained, and into which it will ultimately enter. Can we start there? And they're like, okay. Because it doesn't sound like God in a conventional way. From which, let's just start with this, from where everything came from, by which it's maintained, and what it will ultimately enter into. Can we start a dialogue on that? Then, I mean, fast forwarding, then we say, so what is the nature of that from which everything came, by which it's maintained, and what it will end? Personal, impersonal, or both? Could it be like Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan? We're back to the unified field theory. It has a seemingly, apparently impersonal aspect, an all-accommodating Brahma, all-permeating Paramatma, smaller than the smallest within it, greater than the greatest, accommodating everything, smaller than the smallest within everything. But then, interesting, big shift takes place in Bhagavan. As well, all accommodating, all permeating, what? All attractive. You mean like gravity? Yes, but the gravity of beauty, the gravity of love, affection, of senses, of the, you know, of what is the most beautiful thing, compelling thing to be seen, heard, all different, you know, as Gurwan says, what movement with beauty, dance, sound with beauty, song. Okay. So gravity, Krishna. The central conception, the golden mean of the infinite. The other two represent the extremes. Brahma, Paramatma. Greater than the greatest, all accommodating. Smaller than the smallest, all permeating. What's the central conception of the infinite? The golden mean of the infinite. Human-like proportion. Right? And what? All attractive. The gravity of unlimited, infinite, inconceivable beauty, love, charm, sweetness. Right. Personified to an infinite degree, that is Krishna conception. So because the infinite in a Prakriti Leela is moving amongst the finite as if one of them, and these are pastimes of human-like proportion, Muhyanti Atsuraya, even the gods are bewildered. But the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha, the Chakravarti Thakur saying here, Adi doesn't, on one level, the most obvious meaning is etc. Janmadi means like birth, appearance, death, all the sequence. But he's saying, no, this Adi, if you look at it on a deeper level, is a reference to Adi Rasa, means Madhura Rasa, the pastimes, erotic, what did Sanyal call his book? The erotic principle in unalloyed devotion. Okay. This is where everything has come from. And that means Radha and Krishna. And that makes sense. Right? Radha and Krishna. And that principle is being expressed and felt to this day in various ways. So think, that is at the source of everything. Radha and Krishna. Then Radha Krishna Chidlilamritam. Then Baladev. Then Guru Tattva, Guru, Devata, and things, objects, the objective world. It's springing out of, it's based upon this subjective world, springing out of that plane. So how much is told in the first three words? And more, and more. We're told Srila Saraswati Thakur once lectured on the first sloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam for 3 months on that sloka. Every day for 3 months. So, and so, Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas cha arteshu abhigya svarat. Tene brahma hrida adikavaye, he's the original, and heart to heart, it was infused in his heart, but then it says, muhyanti yatsuraya. But sometimes even the gods and goddesses are bewildered. And trying to properly conceive Krishna. So those prayers, they occur after the Brahma Vimohan. And the Brahma Vimohan occurs after Aghasura. Aghasura means one day, remember every day Krishna and the cowherd boys, they have so many pastimes. And one sense, that's never ending ecstatic joy, but like something has to, they need a break. So they break for lunch sometimes or for various pastimes. So one day when they're like playing in the, and they got their cows and they're going in the forest of Vrindavan, it looks like amusement park in one sense. And actually it is, if you think, Leela means amusement. And like Vrindavan, it's like amusement park, but way beyond what we can conceive. And they see, there's Putana, Bakasura, her name Bucky, Bakasura, and then the third, there's like brother, sister, and their little brother, name is Bucky Bakanuja. And that's Aghasura. And he takes the form, they're like shape-shifting wizards of a giant serpent who we can, according to what is described there, we think is around 8 miles long. So a very large python. And he wants to capture, first of all, he wants to avenge the death of his brother and sister, Putana and Bakasura. And they're thinking, like, if we can just get Krishna, the whole of Vrindavan will be dead. So we got to get Krishna somehow. So he fixes himself on a road and opens his mouth wide. So his lower jaw is blended in with the road and his upper mouth is like touching the clouds. And the cowherd boys, they're all singing and dancing. And then as they're moving towards the mouth, some of them think like, they're saying, what is that? And some people say, it looks like the wide open mouth of a giant serpent. They're like, could be. And they're thinking, but Krishna is with us. What harm can come to us? And we're told as they enter, because Aghasura was not a vegetarian, and eating many foul, like bad odor was coming. And the cowherd boys were a little put off by that. But anyway, they go singing and dancing on the tongue into the mouth of Agasura. And Agasura's, his eyes are getting really big. He's saying, this is great. They will be the bait for Krishna. So as they get in there, they're going further into my body. They think they're entering some kind of a dark cave or something. And then Krishna, we're told that he's looking at this. And even for a moment, Krishna thinks, how wonderful is my illusory energy? It's amazing how it works. Even he's appreciating it. These pastimes are incredible. But then Krishna is saying, all right, yes, out of love and affection for the cowherd boys, I will also go in. So he enters, and then Agasura is thinking, yeah, this is my lucky day. Vengeance is mine at last. Krishna enters, and then Agasura closes his mouth. Now Krishna and all the cowherd boys are inside, and they're all going to die. So, it makes one think about a life in Krishna consciousness. what one may be called upon to do from time to time, where this is all leading. But while inside, then Krishna, he starts expanding himself. And he's expanding himself to like to match the shape of Agasura. And Agasura's soul is situated in the life airs. The life airs are being pushed toward the head, like what's generally called the Brahmarandra. So his it has nowhere to go. He's like he's choking, it's trying to, and it reaches the top of his head, and then the top of his head explodes in a bloody mess, and his soul leaves his body, and then the mouth opens, and then Krishna revives all the cowherd boys, and they all come out, and they see when Krishna comes out, Agasura is the Brahmajyoti of his soul. Is the whole sky like shining, like many suns? And then they see when Krishna comes out, that light goes and enters the Brahmajyoti of Krishna's effulgence. That's why the Vaisnavas say Kaivalyam Narakayate, and they're saying, look, even demons achieve Brahmasayujya. Why would a devotee want that? And as usual, whenever, due to the contact with Krishna, Agasura's form became Krishnaized. So now it smells very nice, and there's this huge skeleton. It's like a ride in an amusement park, an exhibit in an amusement park. Everyone can go there and play and have fun. And Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, it shows Vishwanath, I think, has a sense of humor. Says, one thing we learned from this pastime is somehow or other you have to allow Krishna conception to enter you. He makes that observation. Somehow or other. And this is one example. So then, and gods and goddesses, they're watching this from the Akash and the ethereal plane in the sky, and they think this is so beautiful what they just witnessed, because they like to watch the pastimes of Krishna. If you were a god and goddess, you would too. So they're thinking, oh, this is so wonderful, he's so glorious, marvelous, wonderful, that they start singing and dancing and celebrating, and they're showering flowers, and we're told Brahma is back on his planet. And these are subtle vibrations, right? So they can go from planet to planet, from higher. And Brahma's on his own planet, and he hears the celebration of the gods and goddesses, and they, whoa, what is that? And he comes on his swan carrier and he sees, and there's Krishna and the cowherd. They're all like laughing and joking around and getting, they're saying like, it's time for lunch. What a morning. What do you got? Oh, my mother made this. Oh, your mother is such a good cook. Let me have some of that. And they're like exchanging lunch. They're laughing. Sometimes they steal one boy's lunch and then throw it to another. And they're like, and they go, okay, all right, he's crying. Bring his lunch back. They're boys playing. They're having this picnic on the banks of the Jamuna. That's why the Brajagopis, sometimes they're going like, I wish I was a cowherd boy. Because we have our pastime with Krishna at night, but if we were cowherd boys, then we could play with Krishna in the daytime. Other gopis, yeah, that would be great to be cowherd boys. But anyway, they're there, and Brahma's looking at this, thinking, what's going on here? A five-year-old child with a bunch of other five, six, seven-year-olds, like, and then you got all these adult gods and goddesses. I mean, they live for 10,000 years on an average. So they should be mature by now. And they're making fools out of themselves, like singing, you know, and showering flowers. And this kid, he's sitting there, you know, eating, laughing, joking. And there are the calves. He's not even old enough to like herd cows. Can't be trusted to herd a cow. He's given the calves, which is safe. I need to put an end to this. Get all these gods and goddesses to come to their senses. So I will. He'll steal the calves and the cow herd boys and hide them in a cave on Brahmaloka, and then see how Krishna responds to that. He'll probably start crying, and, oh, I'm alone in the forest. Where's my mom? You know, and Brahma hides them in the cave on Brahmaloka and looks again, sees there is Krishna still laughing, not crying, he's laughing, still, and all the cowherd boys and calves are still there. And Brahma's like, in my old age, I'm like losing my mind. Short-term memory, not good. And he's saying, wait, looks back in Brahmaloka, sees they're all in like a mystic slumber in the cave. Then he looks back, sees Krishna, all the cowherd boys. But now when he looks, he sees, shake the forehead, looks. See, they're all now turned into four-armed Vishnu forms. The calves, the boys, everybody. And then he sees that, and they're all worshiping Krishna, and the blades of grass are swaying and like dancing, and they're worshiping Krishna, and the wind is worshiping Krishna, the elements, the dura, everything is singing, it's a dance, and innumerable Brahmas, Shivas, they're all madly singing the glories of Krishna. And he's like, I'm losing my mind. And it becomes too much for Brahma, and he faints. And then when he wakes up, comes back to consciousness, Krishna consciousness, sees there's Krishna holding the food in the left hand and got flute in his belt and stick for herding cows. And Brahma, realizing his foolishness, he begins offering these prayers, beginning with no mijate bra abra bapuse taridambaraya gunjava tangsa paripitshala sangmukaya vanya svaje kavala veta vishanavenu lakshma shriye mridupate pashupankajaya. He's saying, no wonder it's difficult to understand to you, because you're like mysterious, dark, blackish color, like the monsoon rain cloud. But taridambaraya. But when dressed, and if there's lightning, then we can see. The lightning dress that you wear, representing your potency, Radharani, she reveals you. Only by her grace, then we can really understand who you are. And he's saying, because I have some, look, I'm Atmabhu Brahma, born from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. I have some experience with Narayan. He seems like God. I mean, what you would think God would look like or be like. Four arms and the majestic outfit and Vaikuntha world. That makes sense. And then here, and I know, like, as Varaha something about Yajnabhulk, how you only eat, you know, what is offered in sacrifice. So how can I understand who is Yajnabhulk? He's sitting on the banks of he's on the sands of the Jamuna on the banks with his cowherd boyfriend. They're tossing each other lunches and eating out of their hands. And it's so bewildering. It's so atypical. It doesn't fit the stereotype of what we would think divinity is. So please forgive me. And Brahma and these, and he's saying, and you know, you're wearing like forest flowers from the Vrindavan forest, the Gunjamala, and the peacock feather. You know, and he's starting to realize how beautiful is Krishna. Barha pidam darabara babukarni okarni. And saying, oh, and the food you're holding and the flute, Kavalavet, Rishanavet, you've got a bamboo flute in your waist and a little stick for herding the calves. And the way you walk, he's saying, it's so fascinating to see like your short footsteps, who was described in the Vedas as Arbhutakram, he of wonderful stride. He's saying, now I see your wonderful strides. It doesn't have to do with like length. Although you showed that as Vaman, that you can in one stride take half the other, second or other half. Here, yeah. Very charming way he's walking, short steps, and soft feet. He's barefoot. They don't wear shoes in Vrindavan. He's barefoot on the soil. We're told elsewhere, you know, Vrindaranam Suparamanam Pravishad Gita Kirti. The earth is shivering in conjugal ecstasy at the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna. So Brahma, he's thinking, what have I done? How could I misread? Your pastimes are so deceptively simple. That is a prakrita. Prakrita means mundane. A prakrita means like mundane, but not. So saying, why didn't I know this? I'm Brahma, I created the universe. He has to be the most intelligent. Saying, but jnani prayasa mudapasana manta eva. One has to stop trying to understand you by intellectual analysis, by mental prowess. Jivanti sanmukarita. One is to hear from your devotees about you. Whoever you are, whatever your position is, whether you're Brahma, like myself, or any other position. Now to hear from your devotees. And here he's offering many prayers, but in this particular one, he's saying, Tattenu kampam susamikshamano. Is that the one another? Was that it? Or is it a tapite deva padambu jadvaya? Tattenu kampam susamikshamano. So before that, saying, atapite deva padambu jadvaya prashad aleshano grihite evahi. One has to get a little mercy. It's not a question of intellectual capacity, like, you know, data transfer, or what, you know, deep, what is it? Deep data. This is infinitely deep, okay? Or data might know. It didn't say, you know, and then the data was transferred from, you know, Saraswati or Krishna to the heart of, no. It's heart-to-heart transaction, as Gurudev liked to say. That implies there has to be some feeling, spiritual emotion, devotion. Now, Guru Maharaj, when he was a young man, had this one super qualified teacher. And India is divided into six different, generally into six philosophical traditions. This man was an expert in all six. And that title is called like Sat Darshan. It means the six Indian philosophical systems, he's an expert in each one. It's like having a black, ontological black belt in the six different types of Indian philosophy. And Guru Maharaj thought, Guru Maharaj was young and this man was like maybe 80, and Guru Maharaj said, with your vast learning and understanding, why don't you apply that to understanding Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? It's like Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur has a famous verse where he says, Dante nidaya trinakam pariorna patya kritva chakaku ahang etad satam brinimi he sarva eva sakala vihayam durad chaitanya chandra kurute chaitanya chandra chanane kurutanuradhan. Says, he's so fervent and fanatical in his following of Mahaprabhu. He's approaching some learned man and saying, you, my dear sir, you are so learned, so qualified, and so liberal and generous. I ask one favor of you that I'm sure you will grant. What is that? This, the only one thing I ask of you, who is so learned, so qualified, so liberal, so generous. What is that? Forget everything you know and turn your attention to the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. That's my only request. Forget everything and do this. So, Brahma, we find the statements of the great devotees are always consistent. Brahma, he is also, oh, Guru Maharaj told him, so why not do this? He said, oh, my boy, it's not a question of learning. He said, you've got to be have a little mercy for it to be revealed to you. A little mercy. So then comes this sloka, tattenu kampam susamikshamano, that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, and this is like life coaching guidance, saying, you find yourself in karmic circumstances that you've generated. And the possible outcome is something that you don't anticipate with, you know, happiness. And your experience says you're suffering sometimes, getting a little happiness, you can't just get on the roll of perpetual happiness and only good things. There's always this mixture. He's saying, that's life, that's what you've generated. He says, what should be your strategy for dealing with it? Matra asparshas dukontiya shitoshno sukadukada agama payano nityas tam titikshas fabharata. He's saying, happiness and cold, heat and cold, happiness, distress, suffering, all these things. He said, they're like seasonal changes. What can you do? Like the old joke, they say, everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. Because you can't. What you can do, we wear, you know, a sleeveless t-shirt or turn on the AC or the rain comes, we hold an umbrella, it gets cold, we put on a sweater. That's about it, folks. You know, some version of that is what you can do. You can say, no, I want it to always be perfect. There's E.M. Forrester, who wrote different books, one famous one, A Passage to India. But in response to the futurism of H.G. Wells and Jules Verne, other, like, in the future, everything's going to be great. You know, we're in it. Not so great. Good, but not so great. Anyway, so he thought, I need to balance this. So he wrote a novella, a long short story called The Machine Stops. And it's amazing. He wrote this around the turn of the century, 19th to 20th century. And he said, there was this world in the future. There was this central machine. It controlled everything, right? And like you had a cubicle, in your cubicle was perfect temperature pumped in from out, the air just like smelled the best, and always some nice music playing. It's ironic, he wrote this when end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th. And I mean, we're benefiting, they're trying to do something like this. Let's give him some credit for anticipating this. But his story is called The Machine Stops. So when everything's perfect, and there are, what do you call it, people living below the surface of the earth and surface dwellers, and a boy visiting his mother. He's thinking about living on the surface, which she's not really approving out of concern for his health and welfare. But he's visiting her, and while he's visiting her in her cubicle, the machine stops. And suddenly the music is like, it's not so sweet sounding. Then the temperature's not perfect. It's starting to get too hot. It doesn't smell so good. Everything, because the machine stopped. So he was saying, with all this development, we should be careful to not back ourselves into a corner where the machine stops. And still, there's that impulse to try and control the environment. And what Krishna's telling Arjuna, saying, don't try to control the environment. It's beyond your control. You can't control the lives of others. There's so many karmic collision and uniform collective karma, saying, but you can change yourself. That you can do. In that act of self-correction, the whole world can change. So put your energy in self-correction, and what will be your strategy for dealing with the dualities of material existence and karmic circumstance? Tongs titikshasva bharata. Titikshasva means to tolerate. So he's saying, just you'll have to be tolerant. Just like Mahaprabhu's teachings, Trinadapi Sunichena Tororapi Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadhari. Trinadapi Sunichena Tororapi Sahishnu. More tolerant than a tree. So he's saying, advising the path of toleration. That's Bhagavad Gita. But Guru Maharaj says, in this sloka in the Bhagavatam, Krishna's ratcheting it up and taking it to another level. So he's saying, tattenu kampam susamiksha. Samiksha means to examine something. Means examining your life, examining karmic circumstances, and taking responsibility for that. Because you find many things that are not agreeable, or we wish were otherwise. But it's telling us, no, but you're responsible for that. You have nothing to blame on God or another person or the environment or anything like that. But like there's an old saying too, a dancer blames their poor performance on the stage. But I like the prima ballerina at the Bolshoi in Moscow. She said she learned where every flaw in the stage is. She learned the floor that well. She knows where all the, that's a higher standard than saying, oh, my performance, you know, one part of the stage, there's something wrong with it. Whereas Guru Maharaj, he like, there's a saying, a bad worksman quarrels with his tools. Right? But Guru Maharaj, he has a sense of humor and mastery of the English language. He made a pun and said, a bad worksman quarrels with his stools. And then he gave an, because the first Mahayogi Maharaj night, we put this and some people said, what are they doing? You know, like, they're not, they didn't listen carefully to what Guru Maharaj couldn't possibly, no, that's what Guru Maharaj was saying. Because he gives an example to demonstrate it. He said, just like when you eat and you're eating this food, everything's fine. He said, but then when the stool comes, then the person, they're making a face and this is horrible, this smell, and like, it's ruining it. He's saying, but you caused that. It's the outcome of some particular activity. You had the enjoying activity. Now this comes with it. It's always like that. That's the rule of thumb, back to those thumbs, of the material world, is on the one hand is this, the bogue side, and then on the other side, these things come as a reaction, karmic reaction. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Right? So when we're whining, complaining, unhappy with the very karmic circumstances that we've generated, and we think, life is unfair, you know, God, I'm being neglected by the Lord, you know, doesn't really understand my situation. Although, if you follow the sequence of Paramatma, that's covered. Bahuni me vyati tani janmani tavacharjana. Arjun, many births you and I have had, I remember all of them, you don't. And not only all of mine, I remember all of yours. So it puts them in a better position to understand us, better than we understand ourselves. But still, so sumiksha means to analyze, to examine. And as we, our beloved friend Socrates likes to say, the unexamined life is one not worth living. So this is one of the hallmarks of human civilization, is self-analysis, to examine ourselves. But here, it doesn't only say samiksha. It says susamiksha. Tatenukampam susamiksha. Su means like scrutiny, not just to examine, but Su always adds more intensity, means to scrutinize. And Guru Maharaj takes it, means a deep examination, what to speak of the deep data. So deep examination means, he's saying, so yes, superficially, this is undesirable, it's painful, it's anxiety producing, etc. But if you will examine it from a deeper level of reading, you'll see in the background the friendly hand of Krishna. And then you think, oh, that Krishna. We're talking about Yajna Book, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, for whom everything is meant. As Guru Maharaj said, not all things are meant to please me, but there is someone, ultimately. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. So he's in the background. Then, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. And he's the dearmost friend of every living being. So then, rather than thinking we're being treated unfairly, mistreated, think, if Krishna is in fact in control and in the background of this, even though superficially this is objectionable or undesirable, it must be for my good, for my improvement. He's not trying to take me down. As I've told, the teacher who does the pop quiz, close the books, and then a test you didn't count on, presents that test before you, and they say, oh, our teacher is mean, our teacher is cruel. No, your teacher is good. Your teacher wants you to go to the next level. And that's why you're being tested, not to make you fail, not to take you down, but to help you improve, go to the next stage. So this sloka, Brahma's, he was tested. And he said, and we can say, on one level, it's for the necessity of Leela, he failed the test. But these prayers redeem him. And then we see, how much Brahma learned in this pastime. So he's now saying, don't try, and see how beautiful it is, he's saying, don't try and measure Krishna with your intellect. I've got four brains working and on a divine level, and I was deceived. So stop trying to measure the infinite by finite means. Then you say, well, then how shall we? He will reveal himself to you. Right? He will be merciful to you. It's by his mercy alone that you can understand him, not by your individual prowess, intellectual, mental, or otherwise. So in this sloka, Brahma is saying, and if you can operate your life like this, your theistic, progressive theistic life, then you'll get liberated, you'll go to the highest, you'll come out of this, the limits of the bodily conception of life, and have a full embrace of the infinite. So it's one sloka, and that chapter has around 40, and they're all beautiful. Like, he's sharing on account of this so-called failure in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, this has brought him to this realization that he's sharing with everyone. And this forms the basis, actually, these prayers of the teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Prayer by prayer by prayer, and so beautiful and instructive and relevant. But he's saying, so when you look deeply into the background, you'll see the friendly hand of Krishna, the smiling face of Krishna. Adjust yourself with that, be happy with that. Gyatva mam shantim richyati. Saying, knowing this, you'll be free from anxiety, you'll be peaceful, you'll be happy, and you'll make infinite spiritual progress. Hare Krishna. Let Indradumna Prabhu play the mridanga. Hari Harai Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namo. Hari Harai Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namo. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namo. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra. Garadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhakta Raguna. Sri Jiva Gopala Bhata Dasa Raguna. Echai gochai kori charana bandan. Jaha hoite vignanash abhista puran. Echai gochai dharmui tarodas. Tansavara padarenu mora panchagras. Kandera charana sevi bhakta sanevas. Janame janame mua ei abhilas. E chai go chai jabe braje koilo vas. Radha Krishna nitya lila kori lo prakash. Anande Boro Hari Vaja Vrindavan. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majai Aman. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriyas. Nam Sankirtan Koe Narottamadas. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Prabhu Raja Kacharya Jansa Thirasa Sri Srimad Sri Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnu Pad Sri Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Bhagavan Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Jai Sri Bhakti Guru Guru Ranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Ji Ki Jai Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Rupa Anuga Guru Varga Ki Jai Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramunitananda Shriadvaita Gadadhar Shivasari Govabhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopagopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavandam Ki Jai Navadiptam Ki Jai Sri Chaitanya Saraswatmat Ki Jai Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Jai Ganga Devi Jamuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Om Vishnu Pad Vishva Varenya Sri Layasi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Madhacharya Vrinda Ki Jai Jai Srila Bhakti Vimala Abhidhut Maharaj Ki Jai Seva Vrinda Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanande